I wanna get locked up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on my on the only podcast that I'll hear. Rip off my ears. Oh, the rock show, 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 the rock show. Oh, I want the rock show.
Everybody, welcome to episode 188 of The Rock Show. And today we have a special guest and we have a very special show. We're going to be talking about the Mentors and the Meat Men, two for the price of one. And the crazy man in the Manson shirt is George Figueroa right there. Hey, George.
How's it going, bro?
Not bad, not bad. Welcome back to the show. You've done a few shows with us over the years. I think the last one was what? Was it Black Flag?
And Sisters of Mercy, right?
Sisters of Mercy over at Scott's place. I remember we did that. Yeah, yeah. So today we're talking about two shock rock bands, the Mentors and the Meat Men. I'm bringing George into this show today because George actually saw both these bands. I have to admit, I never saw either one of these bands. Somehow it just went under my radar. Not that I didn't know who they were, but I just never got to see them. And they're not really around anymore. I think they do come around in different lineups occasionally, but not really any with any regularity. I mean, even like Fear comes around, you know, more than these guys.
Like, imagine wearing this shirt and people looking at you.
I mean, we're going to be talking about the Mentors first. And these guys were just straight up nuts. Okay. I mean, they got the attention of the PMRC. In the 80s. And I think some of the lyrics get into the congressional record, I think. In that documentary they show that.
I'm sure it did. Wasn't like El Duce on like Sally Jesse Raphael or one of, I know Gigi was on that.
Yeah, I think he was on Jerry Springer.
Springer.
Now I'll give a little history of the band, and then George, you could tell us what it was like to see them and stuff like that. I mean, these guys were from Seattle, okay, and probably one of the best things ever come out of Seattle in the last, 50 years.
Except for the Super Suckers.
Well, that's true, but I don't think they're originally from Seattle.
You're right. I think, you're right.
They got lumped in with the grunge scene, but I think they're from Texas or something like that.
Or Arizona,
I think. Yeah, right. Arizona, right? I think it's Arizona, but I mean, there's a few exceptions. But you know, everybody thinks Nirvana, but these guys were around before Nirvana. They're a good mix of like metal and hardcore punk in a way that never really was done before, and also they're just known for the crazy ass lyrics and everything, and being known as rape rock.
Yeah, it's crazy. That documentary that talk about that, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. All right.
Actually,
so
you didn't have to worry about being canceled, so you could say things like
that. In those days, you didn't have to worry about that. No. Okay. Could they exist today? Not really. Probably not. So, give a little history here. The founding members of the Mentors are Eldon Hoke, which is El Duce, aka El Duce, Eric Carlson, aka Sicky Wife Beater, and Steve Broy, aka Dr. Heathen Scum. Now, they all went to high school together at Roosevelt High in Seattle, and they began kind of playing together, you know, very crudely with some punk rock and stuff like that, trying to get a band together, very primitive, like Black Sabbath-y kind of metal. when they formed, the Mentors began to tour the Northwest quite a bit. They did a lot of shows with their, well, originally, I don't know if they, the first show was with hoods on, but they eventually started that whole thing of wearing executioner hoods. And the idea was that El Duce was obsessed with a movie called Mark of the Devil. It's a Mario Bava Italian horror film. And in that movie, there's an executioner hood. I think it's on the poster too, okay, of an executioner. Now, in the early days of the band, they had a hard time getting gigs. So what they would do is they would like call clubs up and say, listen, we're a Kiss cover band. just to get the gig, okay?
What and, Kiss should have been.
Yeah, all right, right.
That would have been Kiss if Peter Criss never left the band.
and Ace Frehley, yeah. So what they used to do sometimes also is they would send a tape ahead of time to the club to try to get a gig. And if they said they were a Kiss cover band, they would just like send a Kiss record. It was like exactly the same thing. Be like, yeah, this is us. Right. So one time they actually sent a copy of Deep Purple's live album. Okay. A Deep Purple Live in Japan album. And they thought it was going to a club, you know, then they were going to call it afterwards. Turned out that the place was a pizza place. It was a pizza parlor. And they ended up when they got there, they played a kid's birthday party.
That was great.
Yep, that's shown in the documentary. We'll talk about that.
That was great. Imagine that singing that song to those little kids and freaking
the fucking Mentors show up.
Oh my god. Yeah.
The story goes is that they were forced to stop after one song and they paid them their $50 and that was it.
Yeah.
Whatever. Stop. Play one song and get paid for it. Steve Broy, Dr. Heathen Scum, was kind of in and out of the band in the very early days. He would be substituted once in a while because he was trying to go for a career in engineering. So I'm not sure if that worked out exactly. But other bass players in the beginning when he had to be substituted was Jeff Dahl, who's an amazing, talented guy. He's had a ton of bands on his own. Chris Jacobson, and he was AKA Jack Shit. And Mike Dewey was called Heathen Scum Wesda. I don't know what the fuck that
Mike
means.
Shit.
Yeah, Mike Dewey.
Can't make this stuff up.
No. And you know, why doesn't anybody have band names like this anymore? You know, stage names. I know. Everybody come up with stupid stage names now. So now through Mystic Records, the Mentors released their first EP called The Trash Bag in 1983. Their first live album was called Live at the Whiskey / Kathy DeGrand. It came out the following year. Both records were produced by Philip Raves. And in 1985, they signed to Death Records, which was a subsidiary of Metal Blade. Okay, so they released their debut studio LP, which I think still holds up as probably their best album. The album You Axed For It. You Axed For It. And Broy returned on bass to record that record. Now, during this time, Hoke, or El Duce, maintained a very strong public presence, making a lot of controversial appearances here and there, including he went on the Jerry Springer show with the band Guar, the both of them together. And Hoke was, you know, the band was criticized, of course, by Jerry Springer and, you know, didn't exactly go well, but they were on the show together.
Yeah, they dogpiled them.
Yeah, I mean, remember, like, that used to happen all the time in the 80s. Like,
yes,
fucking Geraldo would do that.
Yeah, okay? Well, they get, like, a real moron audience that would just yell and scream at people. It's funny, too, because the Meat Men toured with Guar, too.
Yes.
And I believe Guar, I believe, is from the Detroit area, correct?
No, I think I am. Well, I don't know if they all are. Was it the one guy that died? And wasn't he from Virginia?
Okay. All right.
They might be from Virginia, but don't quote me. I'm pretty sure. We need to do a show on Guar, Rob. What do you think?
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think we'll do that in the new year. But
they're going to be playing. Yeah. The 13th with Negative Approach.
I haven't seen them with their new lineup, you know, with the new, and all that since the other guy died years back. I haven't seen him in a long time.
I don't think they'll let them do all the blood and guts like they used to.
It's a lot to clean up. I remember one time at fucking Irving Plaza, man. I managed to get up front, and I regretted that. I got drenched. I got drenched in Jello blood.
I'm telling you, me and my friend John went to see him out in Asbury Park, and this had to be like 92 or something like that.
Yeah.
And literally, when we got out of the car, it looked like we just killed somebody. And right. It was funny. It just eventually just all went away. And I'm like driving home in New Jersey. I was like, well, I hope I don't get pulled over.
Yeah, they're notorious. And, you know, and the mentors, you know, they were, you know, they had a big fan base. Okay. You know, underground kind of fan base. And they really started to get more notoriety because the Tipper Gore and the senator's wives, which was known as the Parents Music Resource Center, PMRC.
All Democrats.
And they picked up on them because of a song called Golden Shower. All right.
Golden Shower. Right. Prune Skin Power.
Yep. And when they were discussing this band at the PMRC hearings, they read the lyrics to Golden Showers into the congressional record.
They should have just did the beginning of the song because it starts off with the bass line go doom 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 piss doom 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 piss. I mean, they should have just put that in on your face. I leave the shit tower. I mean,
yeah. What is that? Poetry. I mean, everybody, you know, they got so insulted by their lyrics, but the lyrics are just funny.
Well, that's, yeah.
If you're 15, you know.
That's what they were. They were funny lyrics. They just took them too serious because I think this is the first album that ever came with a label saying Mark Mature for mature audience, right?
Yeah, well, eventually they had to have stickers put on them. The PMRC won that for everybody, you know. I mean, it was a crazy time when they were attacking these bands. All they were doing was making them more popular.
I mean, how could you not attack the mentors? How could you not attack G.G. Allin? I mean, that's obviously what they're doing. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, I don't see what it is. I guess they had nothing else better to do.
there was, you know, you mentioned G.G. I mean, there was a comparison between the two because they're both shock rock. Okay, but the impression I always got with the mentors is like they were very tongue in cheek, even though it was really, you know, really nasty, disgusting lyrics sometimes. But it was more funny. G.G. was some serious shit.
Well, yeah,
literal shit. Yes,
he was flinging. He was like a crazed monkey in a suit,
right, throwing his shit at you.
But the funny thing is with the mentors is that they actually were really good musicians.
Yes, they were. And they don't get much recognition for that.
When they would play in the studio, you just say, wow, you know, this is, you know, the music sounds great. And then they would hear the lyrics and they'd be like laughing like schoolgirls because it's hilarious.
Because it is hilarious.
And that's what set them apart. I mean, I don't see how any. I mean, obviously, it's a goof album and. I think that's why a lot of people embrace this. Say, hey, these songs are good. You bring it to a party and you throw a tape of that in it, people are going to be like, oh, this is great.
Hilarious. Yeah. I mean, they were playing to a certain audience. They had their niche, you know. They weren't bothering anybody. It wasn't like, I mean, you know, G.G. Allin, you were taking your life in your hands a little bit going to see him. You never knew what the hell he would do. But the mentors weren't there to, you know, fuck with you. They're just there to play music.
It was funny because in the late 80s, I went to California. So I said, oh, I got to go down, you know, I wanted to go to Hollywood and go check out all like the music stores. So I went in there and they had Mentors shirts and they had the one with the three hoods and it says Mentors. I was like, oh, this is fucking great. So I bought a Mentors shirt. And then after that, we went to, was it Disneyland? And they had like a Star Wars thing and they would pick people out in the audience. So I jumped up on the stage and I had the mentor shirt. So it was kind of funny because this one girl goes, wait a minute, it's not a Klan shirt.
No, oh, God.
This other guy goes, no, that's the mentors. They're great.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. Like, because of the executioner hoods, people thought it was, you know.
Black Hood, which is the exact opposite. Well, that shows you, you know, people who are easily offended don't know anything about history or what.
Right. They're just looking for anything. There was nothing racist about them at all, or anything trying to be that way or look that way. Now, I want to go into talk a little more.
You're fast to go in Florida with that going Disney that way. Traumatize those bastards.
I mean, what the hell? I mean,
why not?
It's funny because when I was talking to the guy in the show, he's like, "Oh, you like the Mentos?" He goes, "Yeah, El Ducci was just in here." And I was like, "Really?
Oh my God. Man.
Wow.
That's my chance."
That's funny. That is funny. Now, getting back to the history a little bit is, you know, Broy was briefly replaced by bassists Wayne Daddio, Ed Danke, and Lucinda Rezabek. And her stage name was Scum Bitch. And then also Keith McAdam, who went by the name of Zippy. But then Broy would return to the group again. In 1989, the Mentors released their third album, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, a fake live record, basically. They just pretended it was live. It wasn't. This album caught the attention.
Most albums.
Well, yeah. At least they admitted it was fake. This album caught the attention of the band The Revolting Cox, who put them on tour with them. So you had the Mentors and the Revolting Cox together. They released the album Rock Bible in 1990 with Rick Lomas, okay, sitting in on drums. To the Max was the next album, okay, and Clark Savage would sometimes fill in for El Duce on drums at live shows. El Duce played drums and sang, okay?
Yeah.
But by 1990 or so, it was obvious El Duce was extremely lumped up, all right? The guy had a major drinking problem, okay?
Oh, yes.
And he couldn't play and sing at the same time anymore. So the band said, listen, we'll get somebody for the live shows. You could just come up front. Now, you know, band members were doing this to help him, okay? But he just drank more because he was up front. You know, he didn't care. Okay. He's like, oh, great. Now I have less responsibilities. You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. So the Mentors remained sporadically active for a while. Okay. And then in 1997, he was interviewed for the documentary film Kurt and Courtney. I'm talking about El Duce. And in the documentary, Hoke claimed that Courtney Love had offered him $50,000 to kill Kurt Cobain. Okay, even though his death was ruled as a suicide. But 2 days after being interviewed for this, Hoke died. Okay, El Duce died after being struck by a freight train while he was drunk. Okay, and his death was ultimately described as an accident and a suicide. However, some conspiracy theorists have claimed there's no evidence of foul play. Okay, so let's back up with what I said here. First of all, that documentary comes out and it's announced that, you know, Courtney Love might have paid somebody to kill Kurt Cobain. What do you think about that, George?
I don't know. I mean, they were both junkies. I mean, obviously they had their issues. I mean, Kurt Cobain was a talent. He did write all the songs. I'm sure he wrote all her songs.
Yeah.
And supposedly he wanted to check out. Honestly, I don't think that Courtney Love really has enough brains to pull off a murder. So, I mean, who knows?
And I think, gotta agree with you there, man. I mean, there's not a conspiracy everywhere you look, you know? This one just doesn't...
Yeah. Yeah.
And El Duce was the kind of guy, he was just a ball buster. He would just say that just to create the controversy.
Yeah. He was injecting himself into it because people were like, oh, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, well, sure. You know, it's like, you know, try to prove me I'm wrong. And plus, you know, he was, you know, a bit of a drunk too. So I'm sure he was having, just like with all his music, he was having probably fun with that too. Because then people were like, oh, yeah, they're going to take him seriously, you know. So
yeah, I don't think that there's any truth to that at all. What do you think, Rob?
But then he blamed his buddy, and ain't that the guy that drove him to the store and he was the last person
yeah.
to drop him off? That's where you get that. Maybe the motherfucker threw him in front of a fucking train for doing that shit.
Yeah, I mean, he got mad at him for that.
Yeah, he was mad at him. He even walked out of the video. He told me
Yeah, you said you weren't going to talk about Courtney and he walked out of the documentary that's about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, you never know.
Who knows? Now, Carlson, Broy, and Savage continued the band after El Duce passed away and was joined by guitarist Jeff Solberg, who was known as Sicky J, and vocalist Jake Huber, who was known as El Rapo. Okay.
El Rapo. What a name.
Yeah. They released an album called Over the Top in 2005. And then in 2006, singer and drummer Mark DeLeon, in a band called Mad Dog, which was a Mentors tribute band, okay, replaced Huber, okay? And basically later in 2009, they put out a new album with this new lead singer who was a Mentors tribute guy, okay?
That's pretty funny.
The album is called Duce Fiction, or Duce Fiction, excuse me, Duce, L-D-U-C-E Fiction. Their eighth full-length record, and DeLeon left the Mentors in 2014 during the making of a full-length documentary called The Mentors, Kings of Sleaze Rockumentary, which was directed by April Jones. On May 25th, 2017, the Mentors released Illuminati, their first studio album in 8 years, with Broy and Lomas sharing vocal duties. In 2019, a documentary about the band and El Duce called The El Duce Tapes was released to the festival circuit, featuring unreleased interviews with Hoke from 1990 to 1991 and discussing the Mentors in the context of modern day cancel culture. I've never seen this. Did you ever see it?
No, I never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's on Blu-ray and it's streaming and it's even out on VHS if you don't have a DVD player. What's that DVD? I'm even dating myself. What's a DVD? You know, but so they're out there, they're still going on, okay? Yeah. And you know, it looks like basically Dr. Heathen Scum is pretty much in charge of the band. They got a guy named Cousin Fister on rhythm guitar in the band today. Mad Dog was the lead singer to the Mentors tribute band that joined. There's a guy named Don Nuts, also known as the Italian Stallion, in the band. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's hilarious, okay? I did forget to mention Up the Dose, which was their second album, and that's a pretty good record, too. You know?
What happened to Moonstick?
Which one?
Moonstick.
I don't know. Which one's that?
That was that guy Savage. I think the drummer, Moonstick.
Oh! I thought you were talking about the name of the album. Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of lineup
changes. Those days are great.
Yeah, there's definitely. So what was it like seeing them, George? When did you see them and what was it like?
Well, I didn't see them back in the 80s, but a friend of mine did. And he said that they played Lemoore's in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
They played, it was Thanksgiving Eve.
Wow.
There was hardly anybody there. And they were the whole band, you know, El Duce and Sicky White Feeder, and they were walking around the audience with their hoods on, walking up to people and bothering people.
Yeah.
He said it was pretty funny. Of course, when they played, he said they were great. I saw them. El Duce had already passed away.
Oh, okay.
So I actually saw him with Vinny. I forgot where we saw him at, though, but it was in the city. And I think the only – and if I remember correctly, didn't Sicky Wifebeater go to jail? Wasn't he arrested? Because I kind of remember that back then. And supposedly they said it was his kid playing. It was son of Sicky. I don't know if that was just another joke or – but I do remember that. But, of course, you know – seeing them live, like, it's not like a band like War, like, where you're going to have blood and guts. They just come out and play the songs, but each song just gets funnier as you go along. And, like, the hardest part is not to stop, you know, is to not pass out from laughing.
Yeah, because it's so fun.
Laughing. And it's, yeah, and it's just, it, you know, again, I guess some people lack a sense of humor. That's why they don't understand them. And, of course, you know, they come out with the execution of it, which I think they did that so people wouldn't recognize them after the show.
Yeah, exactly. So nobody kicked their ass for what they just did.
I'd be scared of them. Like, these guys are nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just the album cover for You Asked For It. Okay, it's like the chicks all on their knees, like going up. Now, you know what we didn't talk about was the term rape rock. Okay, and how I think El Duce was asked in an interview or something, like, you know, what is your music? You know, he's like, it's rape rock. And everybody like took that seriously, like they rape women and, you know, stuff like that.
And that was on Jerry Springer, I think, where he said.
I think he brought it up. Yeah, that, I think the term already existed, but they brought it up on that show.
And then like Gigi Allen got lumped in with that too.
Yeah.
So then it was, you know, those were like the two bands that everyone talked about. I mean, Gigi Allen was great, but I think the Mentors were just a lot more, they were funnier.
Well, they were better musically.
And they were just, and the music is really, really good. You can't, yeah. If you had different lyrics today, you'd be like, oh, wow, what a great band.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I think people just didn't understand their antics. I mean, exactly. But then again, it's like anything. People in the know are going to like them. And then you're going to have the people who are like, oh, this isn't serious. I want to listen to Rush. You know, it's like, all right, well, go ahead.
I don't think there was much crossover between Rush fans and Mentors fans.
You know, Rush makes me cry. You know, Little Red Beretta. I'd rather listen to, you know.
Yeah.
You know, something good.
Exactly. At least make you laugh.
Exactly.
You know. All right. So that's the Mentors.
The Rap Club. How could you not find her, feel her, fuck her, forget her. Not like the 4F Club.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what they, yeah, the 4F Club. That's on you.
Like the music, you would like look at that and say, you know, not for nothing. I mean, just coming up with that idea, just the names of the people in the band. I mean, Sicky Wife Beater. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be the funniest stage name ever. That's stupid.
That's a very good stage name.
It is.
Hey, what's your name? Sicky Wife Beater. Oh, okay.
Okay. Nice to meet you. Nuts. Can't do it today. There's no bands like that.
Well. We always have those memories. Ah, here we go.
Okay. The Meat Men. Now we're talking. All right. these guys are totally nuts too. All right. Basically, they existed from 1981 to 1988 and then reformed again in the 90s and again in the 2000s. They came back. They still continue to tour and record. The history of them actually goes back to Michigan, Lansing, Michigan, to be exact, in 1981. The original band, existing with various lineups for approximately 2 years, comprised mostly of, well, always, of Tesco V on vocals. His name was Robert Vermeulen. How do you say it, Joy?
I don't know. I think it's Tesco V or something like that.
Guitarist Rich Ramsey, bassist Jim Forgey, and drummer Mr. X. Now, they made their debut with a song called Meat Men Stomp, which appeared on the 1981 7-inch compilation EP called Process of Elimination. It was released in 1981 on Touch and Go Records, which was actually an offshoot of Touch and Go Fanzine, which Tesco V co-founded in 1979. Now, Tesco's an older dude, right? So he was kind of in like the 70s punk scene a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. I guess in the Michigan area. So the band's first 7-inch EP was called Blood Sausage. Okay. Actually, before that, the 7-inch compilation Process of Elimination was a compilation. So I think they were just featured on that. All right. Then they had their own EP that was released in 1982 called Blood Sausage. And that was on Touch and Go as well. By this time, Greg Ramsey had joined on guitar and his brother Rich was switching to bass, replacing Forgey. For their second EP, which called Crippled Children Suck, a great fucking song, issued later that same year. Now, V and Rich Ramsey, now on guitar, were joined by two new members, bassist Mike Achtenberg, who was formerly of The Fix, but not The Fix, F-I-X-X. It's a band called The Fix with one X. Okay. And drummer Barry Johnson. Now, also in 1982, V and Achtenberg played in the brief punk supergroup called Blight. Don't know much about that. Do you remember them?
Well, that was like Tesco V's, like noise rock or industrial kind of band, I think.
I think but it was.
I never really listened to it. So,
yeah. I don't know. So, in 1983, the Meat Men issued a full length album called We're the Meat Men and You Suck, compiling the first EP on side A and then live material recorded at the Mug Club in New York City on side B. That's a great record. Nope, that's Pope on a Rope. We need We're the Meat Men and You Suck. there you go. That's it. Now, George, I remember when this record came out, I was in Slip Disc in Valley Stream. Okay. And I see this record there and I'm like, oh, this is what is this? Yeah, you know, look at the picture. It's like some little kid drew it. Okay. And it's We're the Meat Men and You Suck. Like, it just can't be any better than that. All right. So I bought it. I didn't even know who they were. I never heard them before. Okay. And just, you know, fell in love with that record. That's my favorite from them. So Tesco V decided to relocate. Tesco V decided to relocate from Michigan to Washington, D.C. in the fall of 1983. He dissolved the Crippled Children Suck lineup and assembled a new band, okay, consisting of members of several D.C. hardcore bands. Now, it was a good move for him to go there. The D.C. hardcore scene was pretty happening at that time. Even though the Bad Brains had come to New York already by that point, but there was still a lot of Minor Threat was out there and all that. V then released in 1984 an EP called Dutch Hercules, credited to Tesco V and the Meat Crew, before reforming the Meat Men with a rotating cast of members, including Todd Swalia of Necros and Brian Baker and Lyle Preslar of Minor Threat. During this period, the band changed their approach dramatically to a more heavy metal sound. I kind of remember this is like the War of the Superbikes era.
Right.
Where they were a little more metal than they were punk, you know?
Right. What's this shit called love?
Right. What's this shit called love? Yep. Now, that was released in 1985 on Homestead Records. And it featured, obviously, Tesco V, guitarists Baker and Preslar from Minor Threat, bassist Graham McCulloch, who was once in Negative Approach, and drummer Eric Zelsdorf. For the 1986 follow-up record called Rock and Roll Juggernaut, that was released on Caroline Records, lead guitarist James Cooper, who later would be in a band called Battalion of Saints, replaced Baker, okay, in that lineup. Rock and Roll Juggernaut's a good album, too. The title track is great. I like that song. Now, following a solo Tesco V single called Twisted Road, issued in 1987 by Forced Exposure Records under the name The Tesco V Experience. That's funny. Caroline Records issued a live Meat Men album called We're the Meat Men and You Still Suck.
Just in case you didn't catch it
the first time. In case you didn't know the first time. Just, there you go.
Still okay. Suck.
Now, it featured covers of... they covered the song called Razamanaz by Nazareth. Okay. Yes. Nazareth, who did Love Hurts and all that. And then a song called Rebel Rouser by The Sweet, the English glam band. The lineup included Tesco V, Preslaw, McCulloch, and two new members, which was lead guitarist Stuart Casson and drummer Mark Gouli-Germange.
Look at the shirt.
This is bloody sausage.
That's it. Blood sausage. Yep. Nuts. It's nuts. In the early 90s, V formed the Tesco V's Hate Police, backed by guitarists Keith Campbell and Tommy Dog Cohen, bassist Scotty Thorson Slade, and drummer Neil Ekberg. Campbell and Ekberg were also members of the DC punk band Black Market Baby. The group released several EPs and one album called, which was in 1992, called Gonzo Hate Vibe. That was the Tesco V's Hate Police. V then released three more albums with the Meat Men, including guitarist Norman Voss, bassist Mark Davis, and drummers Mark Glass and Rob Sampietro. In a metal-influenced punk style, okay, called Toilet Slave. That's a great album. Okay. Toilet Slave. 1994 on Meat King Records. Now, Pope on a Rope, you put that up before, Rob, came out in 1995. Yeah, there's Toilet Slave. Okay. Look at that album cover.
Oh, yeah, the Toilet Slave one is, like, fantastic.
And then War of the Superbikes 2 came out in 1996 on Go-Kart Records. They also released several EPs, including The Drugs and Masturbation with True Grit on the B-side, a split 7-inch with the band Boris the Sprinkler, and College Radio Loser 7-inch EP, both in 1995 and 1996. Sampler Evil in a League with Satan. And then V disbanded the Meat Mate in 1996 for a time being. In 2000, Crazy Bastard Records released We're Not the Meat Men, But We Still Suck, a compilation, a compilation of Meat Men songs covered by various bands. Okay. A reunited 2008 Meat Men lineup included new members Ian, known as the Pit Viper, Sugierski on drums, Dave Malosh, later of a band called Electric Six on guitar, and Andy, known as Lord Vapid Lucas, on bass. This lineup toured the U.S. through 2009 and performed on that year's Cover the Earth Covers album. I never heard that album. The album of covers by them?
Yeah, actually, it's a pretty good album. They even do a Blue Oyster Cult song, ME-262, which is kind of a weird song to cover. Yeah.
It is.
Which we'd never think about. And I know, like, one time when I saw them, they kind of came out and they started playing Blue Oyster Cult, and the guitar player had, like a little afro wig and like a fake goatee, like Eric Bloom.
Right.
You know, playing an SG. So yeah. Kind of like he was going, like, right down that line. So it was pretty funny.
That is funny.
Is one thing you probably will never see. I found this from cleaning up. These are a pair of Meat Men shorts. And you see, you got the little guy with the gun.
Did you ever wear them, George?
I used to fit in them. I don't know if I fit in them now. And on the back, it says Pogo on a Christian.
Oh, man. So
this was beach wear in 1994. This is where people are like, what the hell's wrong with you?
Yep. Now, George, I didn't know you in 94. I think I first met you around 96, 97.
Right.
So, you know, back then, George didn't look like El Duce like he does now.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
Well, George, you look like if El Duce and Gigi had a kid, you know, it would have been you.
That's it. Yeah, you maybe they did have a kid. You never know. Anything's possible.
It's true. It's true. So in 2010, Tesco V recruited members of the Detroit-based stoner rock band called Chapstick. Guitarist Leighton Mann, bassist Danny Dirtbag Gillies, and drummer John Swarthy Bunlength Franklin. They released the Happy Fucking Easter Asshole EP. Okay, Happy Fucking Easter Asshole, which featured two Germs covers on the B-side. And that was released on Record Store Day in 2011. They got involved with Record Store Day. Mann was replaced by guitarist Kevin Hindu Kush Roberts from 2012 to 2016, first appearing on 2013's The Tribute with Two Heads split 7-inch with the band Anti-Scene. In 2014, the Meat Men released a new full-length studio album, Savage Sagas, on Self-Destructo Records. That's basically where we're at with them. They're still around. You know, Tesco V comes around. He lives in Michigan, right? He's back there.
Well, I think right now, I think he's pretty much retired, and he just does – he has, like, a toy store kind of, like, at a flea market. Like, at a you know when they take and they have, like, little stands in a mall.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I think that's what he's doing now, and he's pretty much just, you know, taking it easy. So I don't know. I mean
– I hear he grows weed.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it.
Probably. Everybody else is doing it.
You can, you know.
Yeah, it's legal. Yeah.
You're allowed to have one or two plants, so they really can't say anything. Yeah. Well, it's not legal, it's decriminalized.
Decriminalized, there's a difference, yeah.
So, yeah.
Might as well be legal, because everywhere you go, you smell it. Everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Even the U.S. Open, the players were complaining about the smell of weed.
Yep.
It's
because they were just vaping it in front of everybody. So, you know, if you're vaping and it doesn't look like a joint, it means you're not getting high, right? I mean, like, what does that mean?
Oh, you're getting high.
Of course you're getting high.
Oil, yeah.
So you saw the Meat Men a couple of times, right?
Every time they came to New York or in the New York area, I never saw them back in the 80s. I missed that. I know they did a show at the Insiteria, and I'm pretty sure I was still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might have been in college at that point, and for some reason I couldn't go, and I was mad about it. And then they kind of went away. And then I think the reason why he did the Hate Police had something to do with the Meat Men name, because I guess when they put those albums out with Live Press, like, they own part of the name.
Yeah.
And that's why I think he did that. And that album came out. And that album, I remember I found it in Manhattan. I forgot what record store it was. And they had, like, you know, a description of the album, and they just said pure genius.
Yeah.
Which that album is. It's like one of the funniest albums. Even like Vinnie, we always used to sing the song Fucking the Dough. It's about this guy working in the King of Prussia, and he jerks off of the dough pot. He's like, where does he go? He's fucking the dough. Where people to go? You know? You know, a typical... The command that Tesco V has of the language, he's like, there's nothing better than, you know, ass wide common fucks eat pizza full of wet back tadpoles. It's my idea of fun too.
But now, what was he like as a front man? Was he just nuts?
No, he's actually really good, and he's really funny, and he's really off the cuff. Like, he's very sarcastic. Like, one time I saw him at Europa, and he comes out and he puts on, like, these, like, you know, dark rimmed glasses. He goes, you know, I noticed something walking around, you know, Brooklyn. You have all these hipsters. And so, don't I look like a hipster like this? I look like, you know, Nelson Riley. It's whatever his name is.
Charles Nelson Riley.
Charles Nelson Riley. And he was just, you know, he would pick up on anything that was happening at the time or anything that was, you know, funny going on. And, you know, just stuff he would say, like, okay, you know, like, what, you know, do cripple, like, when he wrote the song, like, Crippled Children Suck, he says, like, well, you know, obviously he was trying to get a rise out of people. He says, like, does he really think people think, you know, crippled children suck? Yeah, he does. No, he doesn't. I mean, that's the whole point of sarcasm, is, like, you don't really know if the person's serious or not.
Right.
And then, you know, Crippled Children Suck went into French People Suck.
Yes.
He re-released it, and then it became Camel Jockey Suck. So he used to do the Suck trilogy, and he put all three
of them together. Put it all together in one song?
Yeah. So he was, you know, and he would have, like strange costume changes. Like, when he would do Crippled Children Suck, he'd come out with, like a race car helmet. Like, you know, like the retarded kids have, like, they bang it.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
And it was like really, really funny. And, you know, like, again, you know, it wasn't for the people who have no sense of humor. Well, again, some people just don't get it. You know, they don't see the beauty.
Yeah. And, you know, back then in the 80s, there were always people that didn't get it. But now it's like today, people just don't get any kind of sarcasm at all. You got to really.
No. No,
anybody under 40, I would say, has
that's the whole point of sarcasm.
Right,
you get it? Like it's like the term weanbag. Like Tesco V always calls people wean, but you have to ask what a weanbag is. Obviously, you don't get it.
Yeah. Right.
That's the whole point.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, again, you know, what are you gonna do? So, and he always throws out like a whole bunch of stuff in the audience. So have like. You know, like little rags with stuff on it. Like he'll have, one of the best ones he has, he made it into a T-shirt. Because, you know, you have that song, One Down, Three to Go.
About the Beatles.
Yeah, Two Down, Two to Go. And I can't find the shirt. I wish it's got to be around. And it has the picture of the Beatles and two of them are skulls. Frozen in a bar. I mean, how could you not love that?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's hilarious.
And I think also he's coming out with another Throbblehead. You know, like they have the bobbleheads.
Yeah.
That was at Agronox, that company. So now they're coming out with a new one, a new Tesco V one. So
Tesco V bobblehead?
Yeah. So he may, come around again. You never know. I hope so.
Yeah.
At least before.
Well, you're actually kind of friendly with him, right? You're on like a hello and goodbye basis, right? When you see each other.
It's kind of funny because I just, every time I go see him, I just bump into him. So yeah. I was like, he's going to think like I'm some sort of sicko stalker or something.
Yeah.
And he said, look, I'm not like that. But, you know, you do, it's like a little awestruck. You're like, holy shit. You know, go me. You know, I got all these questions for you.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll see this podcast. It's very possible.
You never know.
That's funny. No. And if you do, Tesco, and you want to reach out to George, just get in touch with us and we'll connect you. Go hang out with Tesco V all day.
Well, you know what's funny though? It was actually Eddie Europa's show, and he was behind me, and I was hanging out with a friend of mine. I was like, "Oh yeah, that's the singer." I go, "You want to go meet the singer?" And I said, "Oh, did you take a picture of my friend?" And she goes, "Yeah, George." He goes, "You know him?" I said, "I guess maybe." I guess that was when he was like more on Facebook, but I don't think he really goes on Facebook that much anymore. Like,
yeah,
none of us do because you can't, because you know you'll get canceled or end up in Facebook jail. So
I know about that. I've been in Facebook jail so many freaking times. I'm more careful now though, to be honest with you.
But I mean, when you go to a show, I mean, these are the shirts that they would sell.
Yeah.
You know, the.
Is that like spoofing Metallica or something right there?
Yeah. You know, I mean, this is always a classic, too. The guy with the gun. I mean, this is off the Crippled Children Sock.
Crippled Children Sock cover, yeah.
So. But I think the best iteration of the band was on. Pope on a Rope.
Okay.
And that's when, that's a funny thing. That's when they started coming around again. They called
something. Right. That was what, 2000 and, was that 2008?
That was actually the 90s.
Yeah.
That was like probably 94, because I was still working in transit, and I would work Sundays, and they would play, they used to have.
That was 95, Pope on a Rope came out.
Okay, that's, yeah. Yeah. And they would do shows at the hardcore shows were at the Wetlands, which was on Barrack Street.
I remember that place.
And that was like pre-internet, so you would have to find shows out. You'd have to get like the Village Voice. And I was like, oh shit, the meat had a plan.
Yeah.
So I left work and I got there. Right. And as soon as I got there, I turned around. Who's behind me? Tesco B. It's like, hey, what's up? But the thing is with him, he's actually really, really funny. He used to be a school teacher. So like listen to you, like if you have something intelligent to say, like you're not just like an idiot.
Yeah.
And it is funny. He'll be like, which is kind of funny because most people are like, you know, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. So, well, he pays attention to what you're saying. He gives a shit what you're saying. You know, that's cool.
And one of the last times I saw him was at St. Vitus
in Brooklyn.
Yeah. And it was funny because we got there early and like I think they just opened a place and it was funny. We literally walked in behind them. So I was like, I don't want to bother him. I said, because, you know, I'm not like one of these people. Hey, you know, hey. Yeah. So I sat down at the bar and he was sitting down. And he was like, and he turns around and goes, George. He says, I know we're playing New York. I was like, where's George? You know. George, get the fuck out of here. You're a fucking asshole.
Now, you said that he wears like a, you know, the helmet on stage for Crippled Children. So didn't he wear like a tutu on stage for a while too?
That was
early on, maybe.
That was back when he was with that was back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when he had like, you know, Brian Baker and Pressler in a band, that was back then. That's because they were kind of doing the whole spoof on heavy metal thing.
Right. Right.
So, you know, like imitating like Judas Priest and stuff like that, which, you know, again, is classic. And he also had, you can find it on YouTube. It's called Way USA. He actually did, I think they only did a few episodes and it was on MTV. And you can see when, because it runs with the credits in the beginning, says MTV Network.
Yeah.
Networks. And it was kind of like he goes up to like Niagara Falls.
I think I remember this. I think I remember this. And it was Tesco V going to different places.
Right.
There's only a couple of episodes, right? I think I saw one or two of them.
I think there's one in Niagara Falls, and then there's another one with John Waters, which is
yes. Yes.
I mean, right up his alley, but I don't think it ever really, you know, caught on or whatever. And it's, you know, it's again, it's, you know, Tesco v. Meat Men type humor. If you like the meat, you're going to watch that. You're going to laugh.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people, you know, those who don't know won't get it.
I think by the time that got on MTV, everybody was shot anyway, basically, at that point.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is with MTV, they tried to form more of a top 40 format.
Yeah.
Like the radio stations were doing, and unless you were like, but they, in the beginning, they were like actually bringing, like, you know, they would play Duran Duran, you know, and that's what made Duran
Duran. Well, they played anybody who had a video.
I heard, you know, but then after a while, they got like a little stale, and then they started doing, what was it, 120 minutes?
Yeah.
And then they also did like the heavy metal show.
Right.
Was it Brian Curry or whatever?
Headbangers Ball.
Headbangers Ball and that, and then that's it. And then, because, you know, just like anything else in music, you have like certain sections. They never went into hardcore. They never went that far, but.
Nah, they didn't even acknowledge that stuff. And like the most they would play, I can remember like Cro-Mags on Headbangers Ball, We Ought to Know.
Really? I'm surprised they did that.
Now, I do remember that being played on Headbangers Ball. A couple of times, but they never really got into the hardcore thing on MTV. I don't know why. There was a whole scene going on. You would think that they would want to. It was just too controversial at the time.
Well, the whole thing was, it was like metal kind of opened up bands like Metallica and Slayer and Anthrax kind of opened the door for those bands, but a lot of them never really, you know, whatever, they just wouldn't play. But then, you know, back then it was like probably not cool to do a video like that, because supposedly Kraut, you could find that they had a video, and supposedly that was on when MTV was just starting out, because they were willing to play anything.
If you had that video, they played it. You could be anybody pretty much.
So, and you know, back then Kraut, they were young. I mean, they were still in their teens. I think the bass player might have been like 20 and the drummer was like 13 or 14, like playing all these songs, you know, writing all these songs. They were like really, really good. And that was, you know, like another band that just kind of, you know, and then, you know, he went off to, what is it? He went to the Cro-Mags.
The Cro-Mags, yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, you know, in the 80s, that stuff was still
Doug Holland.
Yes.
Cro-Mags.
Right. No, in the 80s, it's just that stuff was too out there for people to, for the mainstream, you know. MTV really had so many opportunities to stay relevant, you know, had they gotten into that or other things, and they always blew it, you know what I mean? Even when you had shows like 120 Minutes, which would play stuff that, you know, nobody else was playing, they still were trying to sneak in the mainstream shit in there all the time. And there's just bands that nobody knew what to do with, like the Bad Brains, okay? You know, you would see them on 120 Minutes, and you would see them on Headbangers Ball.
Right.
It's like they don't know where to put them, you know?
Well, that's the whole thing. They're not metal. They don't fit into a certain criteria. Right. That's what I love about that. So you mentioned these Meat Men song, College Radio Loser.
Yeah.
Why that's such a funny song, because, you know, he says, everybody's into these one syllable bands like Beck, Swirl, Blur, which is true. Remember that when you had all one syllable bands?
Yeah. You know, one name bands.
Like, and so they're going to play all these songs and people are going to think I'm way up deep. And the bass player from Supertruck has sex with my girlfriend. You know? And I remember I would listen to this stuff and I'd be like, why is this not like so popular? Because it's hilarious. I mean, how could you not like this?
Yeah. Well, they didn't have any major label backing them, you know, promoting, pushing them. None of that stuff was being pushed in any big way. If anything, the bands were getting ripped off. Okay.
And they probably say, oh, these guys are anti-vegan.
Right. If you did it now, fucking the Meat Men, fucking Peter would protest their shows.
But you know, it's funny, and like one of their I think it's on Crippled Children Suck, and he does a song Becoming a Gay Man.
Oh, and shit.
It's live, and he talks about him. He says, well, you know, this song got people in Frisco upset, but then what doesn't? Fucking jerk-offs.
Yeah, no problem shitting on people.
So, and that's back then. And you see, like, you have this group where, you know, it's a form of narcissism. They're right. Everyone else is wrong. You know, you can say this, you can't say that. It's just another form of control, to have a control over speech, a control over thought on people.
Exactly.
Which is kind of funny, because now, you know, you have, like, these fucking crappy bands like fucking Green Day and, oh, Rage Against the Machine telling you to get vaccinated. Oh, yeah. You should call yourself Rage for the Machine, because that's what the fuck you're doing.
I never liked that
band. I'll do what you tell me. Fuck you, I'll do what you tell me.
Yeah, right. I never liked that band, even when they first out. And then, you know, they were supposedly so anti-corporate and this and that. And then now you go to a Rage Against the Machine concert and everything is sponsored by fucking Nike. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what are you talking about?
The guitar player would wear a shirt like it says Commie or something like that. And I'm like, what is more capitalist than the music industry?
Right.
Maybe the movie industry? Yeah. It's all about making fucking money. If your records ain't going to sell, guess what? You're done.
Yeah.
You know, even if you take a band like Journey, you know, they started off, they were like a rock fusion band, and the record label was like, you're not selling enough records. You better, so they get, you know, Stephen Perry to sing, and then all of a sudden they have all these tons of hits.
Right.
And they're like, oh, yeah, you're great. That's what it all comes down to. And it's, you know, I hate to say, you know, it's easy to say, oh, you know, spread the wealth and this and that. Well, people who say that are people who have no wealth.
Right.
They just want to take what's yours. And let's be honest. What do bands survive off of? They don't make the royalties anymore.
No,
so they survive off merch. They're traveling T-shirt salesmen.
Yeah, we actually had this conversation recently.
Yeah.
You know, bands like the Meat Men, okay, and you know, even like the Ramones, bands at that level, okay, they didn't sell a lot of records.
No,
okay, I mean they had to tour 2-3 times a year for lengthy periods. Okay. And then sell merch. And now what's happened is the whole industry's like a third of the size that it was. Okay. Yep. And there's no money in it. All right. So everybody's surviving off of merch now. That's why merch, a t-shirt's $50.
Yep.
And you get mad, you know, when you see it, but it's like they're not making money on record sales because everything is downloaded. There's no actual people cherry pick stuff now. Like I think we're going backwards to a day where it's all about the single again.
Yeah.
Okay? Because and fuck albums. Okay. Yeah. Because what, you know, people just cherry pick. They'll say, all right, I want this song off this album, this song off this album. I'll download this off that album. What about the album as a concept? You know? It's not there no more, really. You know, the big bands, that's different. But anybody that's not at a super high level, it's just cherry picked.
That's why every time I go to a show, like, well, the Meat Men don't play anymore. But if, you know, or like Negative Approach or any of those, you know, TSOL, any of these bands, yeah. You know, I always, you know, I like T-shirts anyway. And they always have something cool. So you buy T-shirts, but you do see people buying merch and buying like 45s, or if they have albums, people, it's kind of, we've come full circle because now people want to buy, they want to actually have something that they can look at. So they're kind of going back to that, which is actually better for the bands. So at least, I remember it was, I met Ted Nugent once and he was signing stuff and this guy had this thing, like supposedly he was going to play Woodstock. And he goes, oh yeah. He says, I would never play Woodstock. He says, these hippies, you know, they want you to play shows for free. It was like, you're going to pay for my gas? You're going to pay for my guitar strings? People don't realize it's, it takes a lot of money to keep a band on the road.
It's a business.
That's what it is. And if you, you know, if you, like they say, you know, back in the day, support the scene. Yeah, support the scene. If you like a band, you go see them. You buy merch. You know, it helps them out.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you're not going to have anything anymore. Look, we live in New York City. I mean, you used to have all these places to go see bands play. What do you got left?
Nothing.
Like Irving Plaza, and you got like the Gramercy. Now, what is it? Warsaw is starting to have shows.
You got Terminal 5 that's horrible.
What's that?
Terminal 5.
Terminal 5 is horrible.
I can't, you know, I don't know what that place is supposed to be because there's like pillars in front. You can't even see the band.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the best place is actually Pier 17 is pretty good to see bands.
Pier 17 on the roof at South Street Seaport.
I never went to a show.
I saw the Cult there last summer. And
we were going to go to that, but it was one of those shows they wanted you to be vaccinated and everything. So
I had my papers. Let's put it that way.
I saw the Pixies there, and I saw Ween not too long ago.
Well, me and you, Rob, we saw Social Distortion there a few years back. Yeah, it was about 4 years ago, something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Great place for a show. That Cult show, you know who opened up? Do you remember?
No.
Black Rebel Motorcycle Club.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're a good band. They're a very good band. I always liked them.
The Cult is another band, like when they come around, I try to always go see them. And yeah, that for that show, I'm sure they're going to be around again. So, you know.
They did release a new album this year. I don't think it really made much of a splash, but, you know.
Yeah, well, the new stuff doesn't really, you know. It's not like the Love album. To me, that was like the pinnacle of what they did. Actually, I like that better than, you know, the stuff that was a lot more popular.
It's better. You know, yeah, the stuff on Love, like, I'll tell you a quick story. I had never heard them before. And one day I'm going into the old Ritz. And remember, I don't know if you remember, but before the shows at the old Ritz, they always had a big screen down in front of
them. They would show videos.
They would show cartoons or, you know, whatever, right? And they're playing old G-Force cartoons. Okay. Remember G-Force?
Right? Yeah.
Battle of the Planets, all that, you know? Yeah. So, and they're playing this song over the speakers, and it's Phoenix on the Love album. Okay, that song Phoenix, I think it's...
It starts off with that guitar.
Yes, right. I think it was side two, track one on Love. And I'm like, what is this, right? And I actually asked somebody, like, does anyone know who this is? And they're like, yeah, it's called The Cult. Next day, went out, got the Love album, and it was...
Billy Duffy, one of the most underrated guitar players,
I think,
out there. And it's funny, because I've read articles with him when he was talking about, because they were, like, in a punk band. He was actually in a band with Morrissey called The Nosebleeds.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
He's talking about, yeah. And he said that, like, you know, there was, like, you know, you had the whole punk thing and you couldn't listen to, like,
60s,
you know, old album-oriented rock. He said it started changing in the pubs and they started playing, like, old Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And then that came back. And then you could kind of see how the Cult, like, they kind of mixed a little, especially with, like, Ian Ashbery. He kind of does, like, the whole kind of Jim Morrison thing.
Yep.
And,
psychedelic, you know,
influenced by him.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm going to give you a quick story. Remember when the Doors got back together with Ian Ashbery?
Yeah, I never saw that. It was too expensive, man. It was
a lot. Well, yeah, because they did that show at Irving Plaza, which was, I think, ridiculous. I saw him at Jones Beach.
Oh, really?
And they did, what was the Doors' last album just before he died? That was,
Strange Days?
No.
What was it?
L.A. Woman.
L.A. Woman. L.A. Woman, right.
So, you know, Ray Manzarek says, okay, we're good. Since we never toured with this, we're going to start playing this album. So they're doing it. And, you know, everyone's getting into it. And they get into, like, a real quiet part of the song. And there's this girl in the front row talking really loud. And Ian Ashbery goes, shut up, bitch! And it was funny. I'm watching this. Ray Manzarek was laughing so hard he almost fell off his stool. It was like the best part of the fucking show.
That's hilarious.
So he was definitely, I'm telling you, he was channeling. Well,
he's a good front man, because at the show last year, you know, typical New York crowd, nobody into it, everybody too cool for school. You know what I mean? Right. And he was like, he goes, in the middle of the song, I forget if it was, I think it was She Sells Sanctuary. I think it was, okay? And you know, that's one of their most famous songs. And everybody's just standing there like, you know? And he's like, come on, this is fucking New York City. What the fuck is wrong with you people? You know?
No, he does. He yells at the audience. And it was funny. They did a show at, it used to be North 7th. Now it's called the Williamsburg House
of Music. Williamsburg House of Music or something like that. Yeah, I've been there.
His set went longer than he was supposed to. He's like, I'm having a good time up here. Come on, people. He says, look, I'm wearing all these fashionable clothes for you. So.
Nuts.
But even ABBA. Now, speaking of Tesco B, because he has an obsession with ABBA.
Yeah.
Even they played a show, from my understanding.
Well, they actually.
The royalties that they used to make.
They had a new song.
Oh, they did. Oh.
Yeah, only a few months ago. They had a new song, and they made a video for it. Okay. And I'm trying to remember it. I don't think you really see them in the video. Okay. I could be wrong. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I don't think you see them in the video. And you know, it was okay. I thought it could have been better because I like ABBA. I'm an ABBA fan. I don't care what anybody says. All right. You know who was a huge ABBA fan?
Super Trooper. How could you not like Super Trooper?
You know who was a huge ABBA fan? Two people, actually.
Who?
Lemmy.
Really?
From Motorhead and Joey Ramone.
Really?
Yes, was a big ABBA fan. Okay.
I can totally understand that because being in that age group, and even I remember hearing those songs like AM radio, you know, your parents had a barbecue, you'd be in the back of a station wagon looking out the other window.
Right.
And all those songs would come on. It was funny, like, there was like a Gordon Lightfoot song I got into recently because it was just, it brings back all those memories.
What, so like, Sundown?
Yeah. Well, actually, there's a lot of good songs. I never, it's like, you hear this, you don't realize who's who, and then you start looking at it. Like, that's the only good thing about YouTube is because you can find all this stuff now.
Well, you go down the YouTube rabbit hole, okay? I mean, sometimes, I do that, like, when I'm researching for the podcast, sometimes I go down these rabbit holes because it's either bands that maybe I don't know a lot about or bands that I love and I just haven't really listened to in a while. And you just kind of, you go down that rabbit hole and you just start finding shit. You're like, wow, I didn't even know this existed.
I went into like a Fleetwood Mac phase there on YouTube.
I'm very sorry, George. That's very unbecoming of you.
You can make fun of all the words. Those songs come on. You know all the words.
Well, you're right. I do know all the words to Rhiannon. Okay. I can probably sing that. Okay.
This song's about an old Welsh witch.
You know what's interesting about Fleetwood Mac? I know we're going way off topic here, but everybody forgets like the Peter Green era.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
They were a totally, totally different band. I tell anybody that's a big Fleetwood Mac fan, listen to that stuff and tell me if you still like the band.
They won't get it. And it was very similar to the Eagles too, because when they first started off, it was a very much of a different sound. And then when they brought like Joe Walsh in.
Yeah.
And then they brought in, who's the guy they hate now? Dan Fogelberg. They all hate him for some reason.
Right.
But, you look at him and Joel Walsh playing guitar, it's like fucking awesome. Those two, you can see they both feed off each other when they're playing, which is a hard thing to do because usually guitar players have very big egos. So just having two guitar players together is a great thing.
Exactly.
I don't know how we got into that.
Yeah.
Well,
let's go off with tangents.
We gotta wrap this show up, Mike. We're going a little bit.
All right. Rob's gotta go get lumped up.
Yeah.
I completely understand.
All right.
I'm gonna leave you with one more Meat Men shirt. Because this one's a funny one too. And if you're interested in the Meat Men, you can always go to TescoB.com.
All right.
Oh, you got
the man.
All right, so I want to thank George for coming on the show.
Anytime.
He's a rock show veteran now. He's been on 3 shows at least. Okay. You've been there since the beginning with us, man. We love you. Cool. Hey, it's you and you and Tesco V. All right. All right.
I know I'm a little bit of a stalker. I can't help it.
All right. So if anybody's looking for me, you could find me on Instagram as RockerMike212. Also the same on Twitter, now called X, RockerMike212. I am just RockerMike on CloutHub, MeWe, Getter, Truth Social, And then I'm most active on Facebook under Rocko Mike, because they won't let me be Rocker Mike. And check out the Rock Show podcast group page. George, I know you're always on there too, looking at stuff that we post, you know?
Incognito. I like to be in the background.
Yes, you do. And Rob, where can we find you besides football?
Just look up Getting Lumped Up and anything, link to Getting Lumped Up on X, on Instagram, Facebook, and so on and so on. So it's pretty easy to get me. And it's pretty easy to find me. I work at the International Bar Sunday to Wednesday, 10 to 8, for a good time and some good Bloody Marys.
Yo, absolutely the best.
The best Bloody Marys.
The best Bloody Marys. That's no joke.
Bloody Marys.
I'm going to... Wait, what does Biden always say? That's not hyperbole.
I thought I was having senior moments. Still, I see. Once in a while, I forget somebody's name. But
yeah, exactly. All right, everybody. Thank you for watching the Rock Show podcast. I'm Rocker Mike, signing off right now. Rob Rossi and our special guest George Figueroa.
Yeah.
All right. Good show, guys. I wanna get lumped up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on mine. On the only podcast that I'll hear, that won't make me wanna rip off my ears.